This Monday.com ad was created by a team of people and AI agents. Reese, our content agent, wrote the copy based on our best practices, like mentioning Monday.com 3 times. That was the second. Johnny, our coordination agent, built the timeline and kept everyone aligned. Olivia, our human creative director, stayed in the loop. Because agents are great, but they don't always know when a joke lands. She had one note: tell listeners it only takes minutes to build an agent. So, minutes. Create your own AI agent today on Monday.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Jonathan Hunter and CFO Neil Pritchard of Alico, a leading developer of build tech, project management, and visualization software. So welcome, gents.
Thanks, Paul.
Hi, thanks. And hello to everyone listening in.
Yeah, well, big congrats on today's inline full-year results and positive outlook for 2024, with sales increasing like-for-like 6% to £28 million. But before we sort of dig into the details, Jonathan, I don't suppose you could quickly remind investors of what the company does, its key USPs, and the sort of like the health of the build tech market at the coalface at the moment.
Yeah, pleasure to. So Alico, for those who are new to the story, is a construction and property technology business focused on the built environment. We're headquartered in the UK, but we operate internationally with over 50% of revenues derived from outside of the UK. And we're a well-established business. We've got an impressive blue chip customer list comprising in the UK of 90% of general construction contractors. Probably USP for Alico is the best of breed solutions. They're very sticky and they address core aspects of projects, including time and task management, as well as cost management and data management. In terms of the industry in which we environment, it remains exciting and buoyant. There's strong demand for technology and digitalization due to a number of drivers in the industry. Major driver is simply population growth and need for housing and structures and utilities and roads and infrastructure. But of course, there's always there's also regulations and demand for more sophisticated structures from customers, environmental demands, and more generally, I guess, construction and building projects are becoming more complicated as a result, and therefore require more data and management of such projects.
Have there been any sort of recent sort of like case studies that sort of, you know, of customer sort of like implementations, or you just quickly use those as an illustration for investors to get a sort of like a real sort of like, you know, good idea of what's going on?
Yeah, we've got obviously with our customer list, they're working on many landmark projects, and I will share one in the presentation at the Investor Meet company later in the week. One from McGee Construction, they're a London-based specialist engineering contractor that are brought in to solve complex problems. They are an avid Asta Power Project user, that's our scheduling and planning application. And a project they worked on, which was actually on the BBC, it's the Claridge's 5-story mega build basement. So they built 5 floors under Claridge's Hotel in Mayfair, whilst the hotel was still in use and occupied, and completed that project, you know, managed it, all the processes, people, and so forth, using our software.
Good. Well, I'm actually going to do some due diligence then on Wednesday night, because I am actually eating at Claridge's, so I'm going to go and check that out in the basement. Anyway, let's move to the financials. I did notice, Neil, that we've had a good sort of momentum in the business, seen good, you know, top line growth. In fact, that's slightly accelerated into the second half. Plus, we've had a lot of operating leverage with EBITDA significantly increasing from the first half to second half, and also year on year. Can you just take us through those top financial highlights?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, no, it's really a pleasure to be reporting, you know, such good numbers really across the board. I mean, virtually every metrics, you know, really improved. The only one not being cash, but and cash is only slightly down because of making acquisitions, which is adding to the strength and breadth of the business. Yeah, I mean, look, overall, what we said was that we would be ahead of 2022 overall top line revenues, and we are between 5 to 6% when you're taking out FX, stripping out other one-offs, about 7%. But within that, and under the bonnet, if you like, is the recurring revenue growth. Previously, it was around about you know, we before we started this SaaS transition that we're sort of about two-thirds to towards the final part of, you know, we were sort of below 50% recurring revenues for the group, but now we're actually within these 22 numbers, 74%, and so that's really shown a growth of some 22% between 23 and 22. And then actually, if you look at the recurring revenue growth as we left the year, times up by 12, what's called the ARR, actually that was up by 24%. So some really, really strong numbers. We're ahead, slightly ahead on revenues compared to what we had out there for the market consensus. And the market also had, you know, profitability going ahead, but actually we're significantly ahead there as well on many of the metrics. So a couple of examples, profit before tax, 3.4 million against 22's 2.9, profit after tax, 2.7 against 2.4, EBITDA, 5.8 against 5.2. But for many of the people that watch and they compare against the analysts, you know, a good sort of 300,000 ahead of the analysts in terms of the adjusted EBITDA, 6.1 against 5.4. So, and you know, perhaps we'll come back to it, but you know, also things like, you know, moving ahead on the dividend as well, on top of recent moves in the dividend as well. EPS 3.2 basic level, and obviously more like 4 at the adjusted level. So really pleasing set of results. Thanks, Paul. Yeah.
Yeah, well, so I'm a shareholder, so I'll appreciate that dividend. Now, just in terms of the importance of the of that SaaS transition, obviously it sets you up with a lot of visibility for this year, and I think investors appreciate that. But can you just also talk it through in terms of the sort of cost base? Because presumably, whilst not going to have, you haven't then got to support as many sort of older legacy licenses. At some point, there must be a tipping position that you can actually start turning off all the old support that you now don't need, and you're just effectively working on one set of software.
Yeah, I mean, in the SaaS transition, what you're finding is that, you know, and as I mentioned, that stat of 74, so nearly three quarters of our revenues as we go in, you know, because as Jonathan said earlier, we're so sticky and so loved by our customers, you know, we can almost go into the following year knowing that, you know, a good three quarters of that is kind of given already. So that gives us a predictability and a sustainability of our revenues and a forecastability that is really valuable, I think, for our shareholders, as well as obviously the many merits of moving on the SaaS transition for our customers. You know, there's other merits for our customers in terms of, you know, they're getting the constant updates of things. You know, they are obviously, they can pick and choose a little bit when they, for new customers coming in. So, you know, there's different price entry points for them as well, rather than sort of one big massive sort of perpetual license fee or so on. So it's a very valuable transition. And as we say, we're not quite through the 3 years, but we signaled at the interims that, you know, afterwards we would be, and here we are, in you know, vindicating what we were saying there. So, and then really against the cost base, to come back to your other point there, you know, to some degree, obviously software is a very scalable, cash generative business model in itself. If you add SaaS transition on top of that, it's very powerful indeed. So yes, there are, you know, uptakes and increases, you know, in line with inflation and other strategic, you know, maybe one-off reasons for it. But generally speaking, you know, your overheads are on a relatively fixed or predictable basis. So that's starting to come through, and you can see that in the profit numbers now in terms of the operational gearing for the business as well.
Brilliant. Okay, well, let's pivot to new products here, Jonathan. Now, I did notice you actually, you're putting in a bit of AI as well, aren't you, into sort of the training and implementation side for the help the clients. Can you just talk through the sort of the new product strategy and what investors should expect going forward?
Yeah, we certainly taken a, looked at AI, looked at what opportunities are out in the market as well in terms of partnerships or acquisitions. And that's with that knowledge, as well as our, deep understanding of our customers, we've developed our AI roadmap internally. And the first item to be released is what we named Asta GPT. And that's providing is instructions and help for our users, to new users that are learning to use the software, but also existing customers that, they're under huge time pressures and working on projects and so forth. And if they have a query to ask rather than picking up the phone to call our support desk, they can quickly find an answer using the GPT generative AI tool. So far, we're seeing more queries through that than our support lines. So it is being used and continually being updated. Important also, as we all know, that what makes good AI is data. And why it's so good is because it's drawing on 1.5 million words of high quality documentation that we've developed over many years. And we've developed, the documentation in a quite a prescriptive way so that it can be translated. Asta, for example, is translated into 13 different languages. So, all of that documentation is very well prepared. So the next stage of that will be to internationalize it and provide it in multiple languages. We're just going through the testing of that right now and teaching the engine. Mm. I think more importantly, though, we have continued enhancing our existing solutions. I mean, that is really important for us, that we, we're continually taking on customer feedback and identifying their challenges and implementing ways of solving those problems. And during the period, we rebranded Asta. We previously called it Power Project, and we've actually rebranded and reintroduced the Asta brand to represent the portfolio of scheduling solutions that we have. We're offering a platform for scheduling, which is new to many folks, but getting a lot of traction as well, so that schedules can be managed across a whole portfolio or program across an organization with default templates and so forth. And why is that important? Because that provides clean, reliable data, consistent data around projects that then can be used for further BI reporting, business intelligence reporting, but AI as well in the future.
Good. And then just in terms of those product enhancements, the software improvements, et cetera, how are you planning in terms of internationalizing it? Because obviously we've got a strong positions in the UK and Northern Europe, and it's taking that abroad, particularly into the US, which is sort of like home of all things SaaS.
Yeah. That's certainly a pillar to our strategy is developing once and selling and offering into multiple jurisdictions, multiple geographies. What we have found that works best for us as a business is that selling direct to customers and owning that customer relationship is allowing us to grow and expand more quickly. And therefore, in the US in the period, we actually introduced a direct to market sales approach. So for those who do know us would know that we were in the US with a reseller channel. And in 2023, we actually enhanced that by introducing some direct sales capabilities, and we work with the channel to grow the US business. So we attracted 118 new logos together with the resellers in 2023. The signs and indications are really positive in the US. Nothing's guaranteed, but of course, we're seeing some really great interest. We recently held our Innovation Summit in Nashville this year, and presenting at the summit was Mortenson Construction. They're a multidisciplined E&R top 400 US contractor, and they shared their experience with ASTA, and that, you know, the colleagues that from Mortenson that were there were very complimentary and were explaining how 50% of their organization is moving onto the ASTA suite. So we're really wow. pleased. And further, we've started introducing and presenting PM3, which is the product we acquired in July of last year.
That was the best outcome software, is it?
Yes, yeah, the project volume management software.
Yeah, well, just a highlight to investors, I think most of the infrastructure out in the state is crumbling. Apparently, the White House has said that 1 in 5 miles of roads are need repair, and only 45,000 bridges need updating and repairing. So there's plenty of infrastructure work which needs to be off in the state. Okay, let's move to M&A, Neil. Just last week, we bought, Leeco bought Vertical Digital out in Eastern Europe. Can you just go through the sort of strategic rationale behind that acquisition?
Yeah, sure. So thanks, Paul. Yeah, so we bought a small group of companies in Romania called Vertical Digital last week, and we announced for 1.3 million euros. A business that really is really interesting for us, because I think what it involves is basically providing enhanced capabilities in terms of what we do, in terms of being able to service and scale for our customers, first of all. So often we have some of our larger accounts, and we don't have huge accounts. We're very well diversified. But in some of our larger accounts, occasionally, you know, there's an integration into their existing systems from our software that's required, or some other tailoring that really would be another further value add, if you like, that we could provide. And these guys are sort of project software developers, and with proven, you know, capabilities with very large multinational European customers. So we know these guys can really deliver on that side of things. And then actually, of course, what we're looking at is also that ability for us to supplement our existing product roadmap capability as well, in-house as well. So really bringing in some new skills on, you know, some perhaps new software coding skills that perhaps were less present within our existing R&D expert base. But, you know, so there's some of those additional skills as well for us. So yeah, we're very excited about it. And it's been a very busy time for us to coincide that the year end, but we've done it. So
yeah, well done. In terms of sort of cross-selling on that, Neil, is there any opportunity to sort of sell PM3 into their customer base? Because they're pretty big, because we've got, I'm just looking at, we've got Zoopla, we've got Deloitte, PwC, we've got SAP, Lufthansa. I mean, it's a sort of like logo list you could die for.
Yeah, look, they're a very prestigious customer list there, and so on. And, you know, of course, we'll be looking at all those sort of potential synergies. It's a little early for us to say that, you know, that's a definite that we'll do that. But, of course, that would be one of the angles we very much will be investigating. So, you know, I think it works both ways. They've got capabilities that we can provide alongside our existing customers. But clearly, if they've got new customers that we can take our, you know, world-leading sort of portfolio of solutions to, then great too.
Yeah, okay. I would just highlight to investors that they may have seen from the Wall Street Journal at the back end of last week, we had Schneider Electric looking or in discussions with Bentley Systems, which is, I think, is a big rival out in the States, to merge their two software businesses, sort of build tech sort of software. And it was only on a 13 times revenue multiple. So Leeco in comparison trades on 2.2 today. So there's a bit of a valuation gap here, but I thought it'd be useful as a marker for investors just when it comes. And certainly before today's numbers, Cavendish had a price target of 160 compared to the shares currently at about 95p, or just south of a pound. But anyway, just in terms of just the final summary, Jonathan, I don't suppose you could just quickly take us through about, you know, sort of how you see the rest of the year in terms of development and what investors could expect.
Yeah, I think overall, we're very confident with the future and, you know, the outlook, given the recurring revenues that we've developed, you know, they're continuing to grow. We shared that the ARR as at the end of March is £24.5 million. So we're seeing that, you know, monthly recurring revenue rate increase. We're actively looking for acquisition and partnership opportunities. We've invested a lot of effort in planning out our product roadmaps, and we want to accelerate and enhance those where possible. Also, you know, the market is buoyant. We see that, you know, you mentioned infrastructure is just one opportunity, but there's many, many opportunities for us in our European markets as well as the US. So really just capturing that and ensuring that we're thought of and we're seen as the, you know, the trusted partner in the sector. So a lot of the efforts are on branding, positioning as well of the company and our products. I think in terms of the hard part, the technology, we've got that, you know, we're confident. That's where we're most confident. So it's about, you know, building up the brand and getting more recognized and providing, you know, those services that let's say solve our customers' challenges. And on that, the recent customer survey we had highlighted that was one of the areas, the services and the way we present to customers rank the highest. So we are definitely adding value for our customers, but they also really enjoy what we're providing as well.
Yeah, good. Well, I'll test that. I'll say on Wednesday night, I'll take a picture of the Claridge's basements and I'll post it online. Now, Neil, in terms of the AGM, what sort of timing is the next sort of trading update?
The AGM will be obviously in that sort of coming up now in June. We will providing an update in terms of what we did, we're looking at there. I think very much it's previously in the previous AGM, you know, we were trading in line with what we were doing, and we feel, as Jonathan said, very confident for the future.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. I was asking when the next it'll be the half year trading update, presumably, won't it? It may be the first couple of weeks in June.
That's rather than the AGM itself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, thanks very much, gents. Say big congrats on the positive result. It's an excellent outlook, and look forward again in touching base for the half year outlook.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.